Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good afternoon, good evening, good day. Whatever time you happen to be listening to our podcast, we welcome you. This is Rob Watson, and this is another episode of Rated LGBT Radio. We have a fantastic guest lined up for you. We're very excited today, as we normally are, but today particularly so. The U.S. Congress is obviously a huge focal point in running our government. And it is, to be frank, where the action is these days. And we have an up-and-comer. He is currently serving in Michigan state government. And he has now set his sight on the U.S. House of Representatives. He is John Hoadley. He is bright. He is gay. He is a good person. And he has laid out a set of values. He's going up against a man who is very much a Trump pocket kind of guy, who voted against opening up the impeachment and pretty much stayed with Donald Trump all the way down the line. So we're anxious to talk to John and get his vision for where he would like to take the government, take our rights, and take hold of our future. With that, I'd like to welcome on my co-host, Brody Levesque. Brody, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Rob, and good afternoon to our listeners that are listening to us live, and for those of us joining on podcast later, greetings. So
why don't you give us...
I was going to give a little bit of a rundown. Representative Hoadley, actually, in full transparency, he and I have several mutual friends. He is a vibrant member of the Democratic Caucus in the Michigan House in Lansing. He represents an area of Michigan that for a very long period of time was considered leaning more red than blue, and now is kind of a purplish color and even into the blue. As you mentioned, he is gay, but I think the most important thing is that he's not your typical policy wonk. John is a hard worker, and I checked with a few of our mutual friends who indicated that they are very, very excited by his running for the Michigan 6th congressional seat. One of the things that I think is critically important, especially as we saw from the 2018 midterms, is that the Democratic takeover of the House is great, but we need people that are going to be forward-thinking. And I think that Representative Hoadley actually embodies the spirit of that forward-thinking. I think that one of the other things that is critically important is that not only as a state representative in Lansing, but in his previous work doing advocacy and activism work, he's been extremely inclusive. And I think particularly in a congressional district like Michigan 6th, which ranges from extremely red to blue, as I indicated, and just as a tangential, butts up against Mayor Pete Buttigieg's city of South Bend, literally right across the border. It's a different set of Midwestern values, and it's a different set of looking at things. From my understanding, John's a very pragmatic politician, which is a very good thing. He came up in a state that was very difficult to come up with. He's a native of South Dakota. As you know, Rob, South Dakota has traditionally not been too friendly to the LGBTQI community to the point of being extremely adversarial. But that was his testing and political proving ground. And as he moved forward in his career, he's in a district now which is, I think, a little bit more dynamic than where he grew up at. And again, this is a very pragmatic politician. So with that, I'll throw it back to you.
Excellent. Well, with that, we will welcome John Hoadley to the program. John, welcome to the show.
Rob and Brody, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So, John, go ahead.
Well, I just was going to say, John, just before Rob gets started with his questions, I was told to personally extend greetings from the senior news editor of the Los Angeles Blade, who I happen to work for part-time, and that's Karen Oakham. And Karen wanted to make sure that you got a shout-out from her and the staff at the LA Blade. So now that I've delivered that, I'll let Rob ask questions.
Well, I appreciate it. And he sends Karen back a message for me as well. I appreciate how her long-term commitment to making sure the stories of our community have been told consistently, sometimes in places when they weren't in the past. And so a big shout out, you know, right now the a bunch of our LGBT journalists are meeting in DC. And so I'm glad to see that LGBT media and journalism is alive and well. And thanks for being part of this.
I will give her the message.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
So, John, you're going up against somebody who has been pretty much lock in step with Donald Trump. What do you see as your biggest challenge in going up against someone like that?
Well, Rob, that's a good way to start this conversation. And, you know, anytime that you're taking on an incumbent, you know that you're starting a little behind the starting line compared to the advantages that they have. It just means that we've got to work even harder to be successful. But I think a lot of us know that experience where, you know, if we show up every day, we do our job well, we can make sure that we're successful. My district in Southwest Michigan, and I think Brody did a really good job of laying it out, but this district is changing, and people in my district want change. This is a district that voted for both Obama and Romney. It voted for Trump in the last election, but not with a significant number of extra votes. So this is one where this district is, the message is really loud and clear. They want change here. And, you know, and frankly, I'm running against a guy that's been here for 33 years. You know, for perspective, I'm 36 years old. So a lot of folks here are ready to see some change. The things that we haven't, you know, when we look and running against someone like Congressman Upton, we see that he's had 10, 20, 30 years to get some of the biggest issues right. And unfortunately, we keep falling behind. In my neck of the woods, people keep talking about healthcare, right? Like, how do you afford prescription drugs? Or for a lot of my friends in our rural areas, you know, who's going to help take care of us as we get a little bit older? Like, what exists for long-term care? We've seen nothing, right? We actually, Congressman Upton was the guy that tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act 63 times. You know, when in my neck of the woods, we have people that are worried about the climate crisis as well as the drinking water. And, you know, Congressman Upton has had one of the worst records of voting with the environment for a long time in Congress. And you know, even this year, right, when he had a chance to stand up and do the right thing, particularly with H.R. 1, which was the largest ethics reform since Watergate, he voted no, which is just helping to flood our politics with dark money. And, of course, something that's probably particularly of interest to a lot of our listeners right now is when the Congress overwhelmingly passed the Equality Act, to say, regardless of who you love, who you are, you deserve to be treated fairly and equally in our country, he was a no. So, you know, the biggest challenges are making sure that we get our story of who we are out, make sure folks know that there's a real choice in this race. And, you know, we do that by people raising their hand, going to johnhoadley.com or helping us on Twitter and spreading the message.
That's fantastic. I'm going to assume... and I'm going to put money on it that you have been out talking to the constituents in the area, you know, finding out what their mood is, finding out what their interests are. For those that voted for Donald Trump, which signals, you know, a desire to break from the status quo. He was a renegade. You know, he was going to drain the swamp. You know, a lot of middle America found his you know, break it up and, you know, change things, message appealing. What are you hearing from those people in particular that says they're not satisfied and they want what you have to offer, which is considerable?
So I think America is about to have, you know, one of the best nationwide focus groups when everybody is having Thanksgiving dinner soon. And I, you know, and it always comes up family dinner. You'll be, someone's going to be talking politics. Right. And I've hunched those conversations across America are going to be just like the ones that we've been hearing at the doors all summer. We've been knocking on doors in Southwest Michigan, sometimes in places where they're telling us a politician has never knocked our door before. And the conversations, a lot of times for folks that are open to hearing something different, it's clear. They're voted for change. They want to shake things up because the way, what they were seeing wasn't helping them in their daily life. And so they were hungry for that. And at the same time, they're also, they're seeing someone now who, whose character is under, is clearly not living up to the highest office of the land. Someone who's made a bunch of promises that frankly have hurt many of our farmers, in particular in Southwest Michigan, but left a whole lot of folks feeling more divided and more frustrated with less change. So, you know, those types of voters, and there's a lot, both in my district and across the country, are excited when we're talking about, you know, sort of breaking out of these old fights that we've been having for decades and actually start looking head on at the challenges that we're facing. You know, they want someone who's going to have straight talk, right? It means that we need to, you know, we're going to have to make sure that we actually do something to protect the environment. We can't just talk about it. Let's do something that we, you know, when it comes to something like healthcare, what we're doing right now is leaving a lot of folks behind. They don't get the care, health, the healthcare that they need. Anyone that's had to deal with with our insurance companies, you know, they're hearing it. Like, that is never a, that's rarely a satisfactory experience, right? How many of us have been on the phone for hours trying to figure out a bill, right? People are just tired of it, and they want it, their lives to be a little bit easier when they go to bed at night than when they started their morning. And so that's why they're hungry for some change. I've been doing that work in the last 5 years in the state legislature, so I've got some nice experience. I've been doing this work for a long time, and you know, I'm really excited. People are excited to participate right now, and that is an incredible space to be in.
Representative Mobley, let me ask something. And again, I'm going to just kind of segue off of what you just said, but, you know, the LGBTQI plus community doesn't live in a cabbage patch. Yesterday, three students have died and three others remained hospitalized. Two are in critical condition, including the gunman, after an early morning mass shooting event at a high school in Santa Clarita, California. Now, of course, that is the latest travesty piling upon travesty after travesty after travesty. You know, in addition to this issue, you have just mentioned healthcare, and of course, a lot of that piggybacks off of the HMO Act that was signed into law by the Nixon administration, taking it that far back, which essentially gave us what we've got today. The water issue, which you and I have spoken about previously, you know, off air. Looking at these issues, and you're in a district where it's mom, pop, apple pie, Chevrolet, and a Walmart customer. Each of these subjects, and I'll let you hit each one because they're bullet points, but each of these subjects are critically important. These are issues that really do need to be addressed. I realize that the Democrats, for example, on issue number one, have passed a comprehensive gun reform law and handed it off to the Senate, which has done nothing with it. But at the same time, there still seems to be, you know, this lack of real engagement with political types. And you can speak to what's been going on, I'm assuming, in Lansing. But, you know, gun control and these mass shootings, the HMOs and the pharmaceuticals and then drinking water and the environment, your district has always got along more or less with, you know, the congressman, although now we're seeing some changes there. What's the messaging that you want to give not only the folks in Michigan 6, but, you know, as you know, you kind of have a bigger pulpit once you become an elected U.S. representative, and a lot of people listen to you.
The message is clear. the Congressman Upton's approach to these issues over the last 33 years that he's been in Congress have left us with the problems that we're facing today. You know, there's a reason as a state legislator, that I was on the front lines pushing for common sense gun violence prevention when we were talking about universal background checks, red flag laws with the due process and other mechanisms to make sure that we actually went upstream and tackled issues of gun violence. You know, some folks said we shouldn't talk about those issues, but I knew we had to because it was right. And I remind people that, like, this is something that has touched so much of us and people in my neck of the woods personally, when it was the fact that, you know, we're having a crisis for suicide for our veterans, and particularly also for a lot of our older farm owners it's the undiscussed mental health crisis in our country. Or we are talking about places like Kalamazoo that has experienced a mass shooting event, or the fact that we still see so many young people being plagued by violence in our neighborhoods. This, we have to talk about these issues. And frankly, people want us talking about these issues and offering solutions. And so, you know, and we haven't seen that happen with Representative Upton. Same thing with healthcare, right? We finally move forward and do some things like cover people with pre-existing conditions, right? Where all of the things that we could improve with the Affordable Care Act, or even move way beyond now and make our healthcare system more stable, more secure, give people more freedom in that system. You know, I'm running against a guy that offered the amendment that would have dismantled all of that, but for when Senator McCain gave his thumb down vote and stopped the issue in the U.S. Senate. And then, of course, water. You know, first, I remind everybody that when we talk about water in Michigan, we used to have people think about the Great Lakes. Now, a lot of folks remember Flint. And my friend Sheldon Neely, who just became mayor of the city of Flint, would remind folks there is still plenty of houses where you cannot drink the water in Flint, that Flint water crisis continues. But in my neck of the woods, we're also dealing with lead in our water. We're dealing with PFAS, so for these forever chemicals that are in our drinking water system and in our rivers. And again, the answer is seems to be saying that from Congressman Upton and so many others, that the challenges are just too big. So I guess we shouldn't do anything at all. You know, I don't believe that. There's a generation of folks that are saying that we can be our best and we can rise to even the greatest challenges. And so that's why, you know, I'm really excited about this opportunity and, frankly, the conversation that's happening across the country. There's a generation of folks who are ready to lead and raise their hands. And we're at a generational moment in politics where I think we're seeing some of our core institutions under attack, some of the basic norms that have let us have this incredible gift of democracy if we can keep it. And, you know, that's why races like this one in Southwest Michigan matter, regardless of where you are in the country, right? When we are on the front lines of some of these fights, it lets us then push these important policy conversations forward and helps us then, you know, regardless of where you are, move a national conversation on priorities like the ones we just talked about.
Rob?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for raising that conversation. I want to shift a little bit to what's going on in your respective seat where you would want to be right now if you had already been elected, and the impeachment hearings. What is your viewpoint on the way the Republican Party in the House is handling this and the impeachment hearings in general?
So we're having a really important conversation around impeachment in this country. And, you know, I want to remind folks that this is a serious matter, right? Not something that we take lightly. But it is important that we remind that in America, no one is above the rule of law. Everybody has to be held accountable. And we do so looking forward. Because remember, the conversation in the impeachment and inquiry, the impeachment investigation that's happening right now, is looking at behavior that would impact the next election. And so what we've seen is that if we are not careful, this type of behavior could threaten the security and safety of our country moving forward. You know, I have supported the impeachment inquiry And I think that's important because no one should be afraid of asking the tough questions and getting real answers. But the question you asked was sort of, what do you think about our Republican colleagues and how they handle this? I'm disappointed that we aren't seeing more thoughtful leadership. And it seems like a lot of folks decided to jump to the conclusion before reviewing the evidence. You know, there's a saying, right? A picture is worth a thousand words. And so when I saw my congressman, Representative Upton, having a dinner at a Trump property with President Trump and the minority leader of the Congress 2 days before the key vote to begin the impeachment inquiry, that picture, I think, said Fred Upton has changed 250 times on repeat. And it really was an example of so many of, unfortunately, our Republican colleagues that have that are not taking the inquiry as serious as they should. We're talking about the safety and security of our country. We've got to get this right.
No, excellent. I'm glad you see it that way. It is shocking me. I grew up through Watergate, which, to your point, is probably something you heard about in history class. But it was to see people whose alliance is so much towards their political agenda with virtually no regard to the bigger picture of our government and principles that we stand for. Donald Trump made the comment about being able to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not having anybody, have no consequences against that. And that's what it looks like. It looks like he could do whatever he wants. And quite frankly, as an American, it scares me. So I don't have a question in there, just kudos to everything you just said. Brody?
Representative Hoadley, let's talk a little bit about Michigan 6. Now, it's my understanding from talking to various political consultants, including your own campaign, that Representative Upton has held practically next to no town hall. So it would seem to me that an important part of the process of being a member of the House is to be able to understand what the constituency wants that puts you there. Talk to me a little bit about the town halls that I know that you've actually held and some of the things that the constituency of Michigan 6 is saying to you right now.
Well, it's hard to be a representative if you're not engaging in actual conversation with the people whose voices you're supposed to carry to Congress. You know, as a state representative, I've always made it a part of my mission to hold open office hours, regular coffee hours, sometimes in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon, and of course, being engaged on our social media, whether that's on our Facebook page, John.Hoadley, or if you're on our Twitter, @JohnHoadley. So we're hearing from people. So we took those same values when we started running for Congress. The first thing we did after launching in April was do a listening tour across the district. We held 14, 15 small events, right, in coffee shops and bakeries, in bars all across the area, making sure that folks could tell us what was important to them. And by the way, I'm really glad I did, right, because the biggest things that we kept hearing people saying, we want to address are things like prescription drug prices or long-term care, protecting our water and the environment. One that came up a lot is affordable housing. And so, it turns out when you listen, you get really good ideas on how to move forward. And, when we talk about Congressman Upton, he does not do public town hall events. I think we probably did more town hall events in the month of April or since we've launched than the congressman's probably done in the last 10 years. And that's important, though, because if we're going to move forward, if we're going to bring the country back together, it means that sometimes we have to have those types of conversations where it can be difficult, but we have to be ready to listen and engage in dialogue that tries to move us forward. I've been glad to see so many of my colleagues. I'm looking at some of the other first-term members of Congress who come back in their district, and they have those tough conversations, right? And that's their first term. So, someone who's been here for 33 years should be able to have those types of conversations too. It's what the American people demand. It's what people in my district demand as well.
Well, a follow-up, if I may, Representative Holley, to that. As you know, Delegate Danica Rome of the Virginia General Assembly was just reelected to represent a suburban Washington district that traditionally has been long-term Republican held, and she's done a marvelous job. As a note, Delegate Rome, of course, is transgender. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, and then we've had these conversations with the Buttigieg campaign, and I'm going to have it with you. As you're out in Michigan 6 and you're talking to your potential constituency there, the gay thing, does it come up? Does it affect the way that you're treated? Does it affect the conversation? Does it become part of the conversation? Or is it more along the lines of, oh, you're gay, that's nice. Let's talk about prescription drugs.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, of course, congratulations to Danica. She did incredible on her race, and she worked really hard. The people in her district have a delegate that is working for them. And so kudos for not only winning re-election, but increasing her margin in so many places. And the lesson that I think a lot of us take from that race is that we're going to talk about and we're going to focus on the issues that matter to voters. And we're going to bring our lived experiences into that conversation. So, you know, for me, right, when we're talking about healthcare, I'm going to talk about my partner's prescription drug costs. And I'm going to talk about how that impacts our families, right? So you're going to hear us do that because those are the issues that are on people's minds. But to your question, right, does the gay thing come up? You know, sometimes, right? And I'll tell you, I was just talking about this the other day. I was in a panel at the Victory Fund that we're oftentimes being asked to find the sweet spot in how we talk about our lives and our families, right? Where people want us to be authentic, and sometimes they worry what can happen if we are too boldly honest with who we are. And so I say that, and I think a lot of our listeners know that, right? The struggle that you decide, like, can you put a picture of your partner up at work? Right? Are they okay, but are they really okay? And I'll tell you, though, running for office is it takes a big leap of faith that you have to share a lot about your life. And so, I've been having these conversations in Southwest Michigan for a long time. Sometimes the question comes up, and it's phrased as, I don't have a problem, but what about my friend who might have this issue, right? And and I think we've all dealt with that. The conversation keeps coming back to, if you want someone to make sure that that your parents or your grandparents who you love get long-term care support in their homes, we need to have a conversation. The same thing then might, every once in a while we get someone who has a concern or a question. And, I'm used to this. I've been doing, whether it was from the first growing up in South Dakota to living and representing Southwest Michigan in the state legislature, I don't expect everyone to agree with me in everything all the time. But I do know that people are generally pretty decent. They'll give you a fair shake. And if you can show you're working hard for them, much like Danica did, you can earn a lot of respect and with it a lot of votes.
Okay, that's right.
I want to leverage a little bit.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I want to leverage some of the things around Danica, not just her accomplishment of re-election, but who she is. The transgender community in the United States, very much thanks to, in no small part, the Trump administration, is probably one of a couple groups that have been maligned, have been under fire. The transgender soldiers have been thrown out of the military. What challenge do you see, especially not wanting to create a perception that if elected, you were going to go after only LGBT interests first, but how are you going to go after the protection of the transgender folks of America, especially given this coming week is Transgender Day of Remembrance?
I'm really glad you brought up that this upcoming week is Transgender Day of Remembrance. It is a stark reminder that transgender folks in America face significantly elevated rates of discrimination and violence. Trans women of color in particular are murdered at appalling rates across this country. So we have to be lifting up the experiences of our trans siblings to make sure that they get to enjoy the same equal justice under law, the same idea and dream that this country is built on, that so many of us have been striving to, as we build that more perfect union, never finished, but always in moving, attempting to move in the right direction. And this conversation could not be more aptly timed. We have watched as over the last few years, our country becomes even more divided, where the policy choices that were made in the Trump-Pence administration have threatened our families. It has divided families in our country. It has placed LGBT folks, and particularly trans folks, under attack. We just celebrated Veterans Day, and you know, there's still trans veterans who are not getting the care or respect that they deserved in our armed forces. And so there is so much riding at this next election. You know, if anyone was thinking about sitting out this next election, we as a community, we as folks who care about making sure that we lift everybody up, need to talk to them, because every vote matters. And we saw the consequence of what happens when folks sit out an election. You know, we're going to win in Southwest Michigan by making sure that everybody gets to the polls. So anyone that's listening, right, if you've got that friend in Kalamazoo, you have a, you know, someone you know in Benton Harbor, you know someone in Allegan, we need you to put that call in, right? Because your personal touch makes a difference, not just on this election, but on ultimately the policies that we're going to pass. You know, I say oftentimes, you know, Congressman Upton has had 10, 20, 30 years to tackle some of these big issues, and unfortunately he has not. But the choices that we'll make over the next, you know, 2, 4, 6 years could impact the direction of our country for the next century. You know, we've got a shot clock when it comes to the climate. We've got big questions on making sure that we can have healthcare that works for everybody in our country. We've got, you know, this question of will we make sure democracy is responsive to folks by taking that dark money and the corporate PAC money out of politics. But those are choices that will be decided based on who wins in those 2020 elections. So it is incumbent upon all of us that we get excited, we get fired up, go help your favorite local candidates, right? Go help your favorite candidates that are running for Congress or Senate. Make sure you're chipping in to your favorite you know, candidate that's running for president. We've got a whole bunch of great ones, right? But my point is that we have to be involved. It's said all the time that this election might be the most important one of our lifetime. Folks mean it, particularly right now. Folks mean it.
I think that's excellent. And I think one of the things that you mentioned that is important is reaching out to the people who traditionally have not shown up to the polls. What group in Michigan would you see as that, the ones that are normally the ones that sit it out? And how are you reaching them to make sure that they don't do that this time?
That's a great question, right? And, you know, we can look at big statistics about who participates and who doesn't. Generally, what we know is that, you know, the older folks get, the more likely they are to cast their ballot. Some recent data came out that suggested that the number of folks that were definitely going to vote, you know, who are over the age of 65, had a significant gap on those that were going to vote who are under the age of 40. But that's really just a conversation about making sure that folks know what's at stake on the ballot and also reminding people about the process of voting, right? In Michigan, we've made sure that we modernized our voting laws so they are secure, accurate, and accessible. So a lot of times young families, they couldn't, in Michigan, they couldn't vote absentee unless they had a specific reason, which, you know, makes it hard if you're trying to take the kids to work or you know, pick up the kids after school, or you're kind of worrying about when you're going to be at work, or maybe you get called in too early or too late. So we finally modernized some of those elections. So if you know folks in Michigan, we're going to expand who have access to the ballot and make sure it is more accessible while staying more secure. But that's true for a lot of folks across the country. So, you know, I think a big chunk of this is, you know, young people in your life, make sure you reach out to them and talk about not only why your vote matters, but also just walk through exactly how do you access the vote? Do you have to go in person? Can you do it by mail? And it's those simple questions that really helps people start building a plan of how they're going to vote when it comes to the election. The second thing is that matters. I'd say it matters a lot in our district because, you know, when you look across the country, I'd say Democrats haven't done it always a great job about reaching out to our rural communities. And, you know, regardless of whether you're knocking doors in our core urban neighborhoods or you're not walking down those long driveways on the county roads, everybody's voice matters in politics because the people who cast votes, the people who win elections will decide the laws that impact everyone equally. Because remember, nobody's above the law. And in a district like mine, we've been working all summer. We've been having conversations with folks in parts of our district where they say no one's ever knocked on their door before. And that is how we're changing the equation. That's how we're going to make sure that this race, we put those votes up on the board so we can win this thing. But I will also just remind you that, you know, to do that work, it's hard. It takes a big team, and we've got to make sure that we're reaching people in lots of different ways. And that's why when people chip in, right, and people sign up, maybe they're giving 10 bucks a month. Maybe they're chipping in because they see something on Twitter, and they'll do a one-time gift of $6 or $60, whatever it is, right? When we all chip in a little bit, when we all do a little, we can get a lot done. That's what I've been doing as a state legislator, and that's how we're going to win this congressional district.
Excellent. Brody?
Yeah, speaking of issues, Representative Hoadley, let's talk about something that I'm sure does impact your district in terms of migrant farm workers. But Michigan, as you know, has a rather large population of Muslim Americans and immigrants from Arabic-speaking countries, especially in the Dearborn area, which is not anywhere close to where you're at. But overall, you know, this is a blended issue because it addresses two separate things. The immigration system itself, and quite frankly, the naked white supremacy and racism that we've seen literally coming from this White House in the personage of the special counsel to the president, Stephen Miller, and some of the policies that have been enacted by the Department of Homeland Security. As a member of Congress, how would you help address the immigration issues with a two-pronged attack? First, making sure that the immigration system has some sort of comprehensive overhaul and reform, and also addressing the fact that we need to, at the same time, with law enforcement at a federal level, maybe do something to really pinpoint and directly go after the white supremacy thing that's caused so much problem, because the two issues are tied together, at least in my mind.
Brody, it sounds like you're raising your hand to be on my policy team, because you're getting that 100% right. We need comprehensive immigration reform. And so, it's the right thing to do for our friends and neighbors. No one should be left waiting for their lives as they are sitting on a list, trying to figure out if they're going to be able to be with the people that they love. And a lot of that's because we just that Washington, D.C. has lacked the courage to have a conversation about actually updating our laws. And so that's why we see workarounds and we see incomplete action. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for families. It's the right thing to do for the people that actually are stuck in the middle of this frustrating and broken system. It's the right thing to do for our friends and neighbors who are oftentimes working in our communities and being active contributing participants. So that requires us to be bold, and it requires us to think big, right? And to stop settling for those answers where we have to accept just a little bit because that seems like that's all that DC can do today. And at the same time, we need to make sure that the words and laws of our country live up to our promise that we are all created equal. And so when we have folks that are inhabiting the highest offices that are having the ear of the leader of the free world, when we have people that would tacitly and quietly condone folks moving down that management change, that would look the other way when it becomes to such important issues such as racial equality, to standing up to white supremacy, to making sure that no one is discriminated against, that this is an example where we have to get it right. And unfortunately, for so many of the hiring practices the policies and the words that have been coming out of the Trump administration, the Trump-Pence administration, it has been getting it wrong. And, you know, my heart just aches for so many people who for the last 3 years have seen the color of their skin or the way they pray being used as a way to divide this country. We are better than that as America. We are better than that. And, you know, it's about time that we all stand up and make it loud and clear, which people have been doing across the country, but the loudest voice at the ballot box in 2020 and send a clear message that we want a country that unites and not divides.
Fair enough,
Excellent.
Rob.
Yep. One of the key things you mentioned today with us, and it's also probably the first value in your principles that you have laid out on your website, is healthcare. There have been several proposals laid on the table by prospective presidential candidates. What is the one that you want to get into Congress and start constructing? Is it a fix of Obamacare? Is it Medicare for all? What is your vision?
So, you know, I want to start by saying, as a state legislator, my track record is we're going to do something that, if we can pass it today, makes someone's life better tomorrow, right? Like, that's the, when it comes to healthcare, it cannot wait. And that's why I've been a champion for whether we are, you know, making copays and prescriptions more accessible and affordable, to or building a system that makes sure that literally everybody gets the healthcare they need without surprise or and without delay. So, you know, I've talked about supporting a Medicare for all system, and, you know, I love it because the pieces that are being talked about currently in Senator Sanders' plan really address things like long-term care, you know, controlling the cost of prescription drugs. At the same time, too, you know, I've watched the protections that have been made available under the Affordable Care Act, like making sure that no one is denied coverage for a pre-existing condition, be one of the bedrock principles that is still under attack by so many of the Republicans that are currently serving in Congress. Right. So for me, right, I think it's important that we set the goal of where we want to go. You know, let's make sure we have universal coverage. Everybody gets health care. No one's paying co-pays or surprise bills. No one is being denied life-saving medication and prescription drugs because they can't afford it or they can't get access to it. That people get to stay in their homes and get a little extra care so that they can be in their homes with dignity as they age. Let's set the goal, right? And let's keep working on that. And you know, and then make sure that we are working as fast as possible to get there. And one thing I've loved about watching these debates is that we're having this conversation and across the country. And, you know, it's really underlying this fact that healthcare is this concern that is just in the back and sometimes in the front of so many of our families' lives. And so, you know, for me, it's about let's get everybody covered. Let's do that. And also let's make sure that we aren't missing the forest for the trees. There are plenty of folks that are running right now whose plans it would be to take away healthcare. I serve in the legislature where my Republican colleagues passed a bill that would put these draconian requirements on our Healthy Michigan plan. That's the Medicaid expanded population in Michigan to try to kick people off of their health insurance. So let us be clear. There is a clear distinction. And while we may have nuanced differences on policies, right, I would remind all of us who are fighting for the more freedom that a fixed healthcare system would actually provide, that there are people who are actively trying to take it away.
Mm-hmm. No, that's excellent, and I really appreciate your thoughtfulness on that. It's one thing that nobody has talked about very much, but just my observation of the election with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump was that the affordable health care bills, i.e. the invoices to the consumer, came out about a month before the election day, and there was a huge increase. And I really think that hurt Hillary Clinton in a way that the press doesn't really talk about. But it hits home exactly where you're speaking to And, you know, that has, I think, as much an effect as some of the media's favorite talking points. Brody?
Representative Hoadley, another issue that comes to mind, and this is kind of very critical to folks not that much younger than you, and that's student loan debt and education. Now, a couple of the candidates running for the presidency on the Democratic ticket have said that they are very much inclined to agree towards having higher education be either structured at no cost or little cost, particularly if you're talking community colleges and institutions of that nature. Education has always been problematic in the last four decades in many places because, as you know, sir, Republicans have taken over state house after state house after state house, and the first thing that always seems to go on the chopping block without fail is usually education. As a member of Congress representing the 6th Congressional District, what's important to you to message for your constituents and have a conversation about student loan debt and education and opportunities for students coming up underneath?
It's like you know that I come from a family of teachers. So if I wasn't talking about education, I probably couldn't even go home for Thanksgiving. So thank you for bringing that up. And, you know, I serve in one of the state legislature, I serve in the Appropriations Committee. So I deal with our budget. And I will say I have seen firsthand the dollars and cents disinvestment that's happened in Michigan for a number of years related to both our K-12 and early childhood education work, as well as our higher education, whether we're talking about our career and technical supports, our community colleges, or four-year institutions. And look, like, my generation is swimming. We are not swimming, because we are drowning in student debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, Michiganders have $40 billion, with a B, dollars of student debt sitting in the state of Michigan right now. $40 billion. And that's
good
because
Lord.
We've watched over time. Yeah, it's incredible, right? How do you, you know, for all the folks that love to rag on millennials, how do you balance lower starting wages with rising student debt? You know, when you're trying to figure out, you know, how to afford a car and car insurance, let alone buy a house, right? Like, we're on a path that is keeping us less free as a country. And, you know, I've watched as folks have not responded to this. You know, the best answer that I keep getting from so many of my colleagues is, well, I remember when, and then they tell me about they could work a summer job that would pay for a year of school. And I want to be like, you know, I remember when all of my friends are still paying giant student loan bills every month, right? It's just an absurd conversation. Now, I think it's telling that all of the top-tier candidates that are running in the Democratic platform are trying to address student debt in one way or another, whether it's through a service program, whether it's through canceling student debt, whether it's prorating and canceling some of the student debt. Because the reason that debt exists overwhelmingly is because other folks who had the benefit of going to college or to community college and have the taxpayers invest in their future, knowing that they were going to be doing critically important jobs and innovating in our economy, they stopped investing. And so they made it through their program, and then they didn't pay it forward. And so, you know, this is about a way to start undoing the anchor that is dragging down a generation that want to access the same opportunities as everybody else has, or many other people have from generations before, right? And I say that knowing that right now more of our colleges and universities are geared to programs that are trying to expand who has access to go to college. So we are building a diverse number of people that are coming up, that we're undoing some of the systems of inequality that have existed in the past. But at the same time, we're saddling folks with debt. So we got to fix that. And, you know, it's one of the things that people vote on. I'm proud that I've been able to do real work on that. I think you're going to see some more stuff coming out soon because, you know, I'm excited to be running to represent the people of the 6th Congressional District in Southwest Michigan. And every day I get up and still do my day job of making sure that we are moving families' lives forward in the 60th House District here in Kalamazoo. And you know, we got more work to do, and you know, people are counting on us. So let's get it done.
Yeah, that's excellent. I wanted to go to a place where you have been incredibly respectful of people of faith and their religious beliefs and their right to pray, et cetera. How do you balance that with staying respectful of that, and yet there are many people who have very strong held beliefs against, you know, to the point that they do not want women to have the choice of having abortions. They do not want to, if they own a business, they do not want to be responsible or providing any vehicle where an abortion might occur, and or with LGBT rights, they have strong feelings and convictions against being anywhere near gay matrimony and don't want their business to be associated with that. Of course, all of those things are things that the religious right politically are going after and trying to make movement. What is your answer to people who like everything that you're saying, but that is a sticking point for them?
Well, you know, I go back to the four freedoms, right? Freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And when I think about this, you know, the analogy I continue to use is that we have a freedom of worship in this country. It's one of the things that set us apart. But the freedom of worship has always been a shield, not a sword. So we have the freedom to pray and the right to pray in the way that we choose to do so, from the freedom of worship from government intrusion. But there's a growing debate and a conversation that I think we have to be clear about, that at the point where that freedom becomes a sword that's used to deny other people's freedoms, that's where historically in our country we've had appropriate laws that, you know, go back to that old analogy, right? Like, what is it, that one that's like, your freedom ends, but my freedom ends when my fist hits your nose or something like that, right? It's the difference between those two. And that's exactly right. Like, we have to be respectful of everybody. And we have to be aware that our freedoms have to live in a space where we're not impacting others. So long story short, we see a conversation that's happening across the country where some folks are trying to restrict other people's freedom to make choices for their own bodies, freedom to enter the marketplace just because of who they are, who they love, freedoms that are being whittled away because of how they pray. It's important that we restore that conversation. So we go back to a country where everybody has, you know, whether it's speech or worship, their freedoms to participate as fully engaged in our American story.
Wonderful. I want to thank you so much for your in-depth answers, by the way, because you're not giving pat answers and platitudes, and I really love the depth of everything that you've thought out and worked on. It is sincerely very, very impressive and inspiring. One thing we usually like to ask our guests at this part of the show is, and going back to those deep thought out answers, what is a question that we should have asked you that we have not asked you so far?
In the full spirit of that, I would say, you should have asked me about how awesome my dog Benjamin is. He's the world's friendliest beagle. So any other beagle lovers out there, give me a tweet, send something to @JohnHoadley. I want to see pictures of your puppies, okay? And I'm a J-O-N John, so J-O-N-H-O-A-D-L-E-Y. Find me on Twitter. There's nothing that a cute puppy picture can't fix.
Amen.
That is true. Although I have to say, although I grew up loving beagles, absolutely adore beagles, I have fallen into the rat terrier camp, but I do see your point.
Well, I am looking forward, Brody, to the tweet from you then.
Yeah, well, we're between dogs right now, so yeah, I may have to either do a fantasy tweet or a belated one once we we bring on that new family member.
I have nothing more to add except if you could just tell our listeners your area where they can go to help your campaign and help you out. And again, Representative Foley, I thank you very, very much for your time this afternoon, sir. So if you'd tell our listeners where to go to help, and I'm going to give it to Rob.
So thanks, everybody. If this is the type of race that you're excited about, regardless of where you live in this country, I would love if you can go to johnhoadley.com. That's JohnHoadley.com and raise your hand to help. Maybe you can chip in and make a one-time or sign up to do a monthly contribution. Maybe you follow us on our social media to help us amplify our message as we're talking about things like long-term care and, you know, dealing with clean water and the climate crisis. We need your help to do that. And so, that's the best way to get involved. If you live in Southwest Michigan, there's a volunteer tab on there. And so, click it, let us know you want to help. And one of our awesome team members will be reaching out back to you shortly. Because when we all get involved, when we all do a little, we get a lot done, which is what we need to do for this district.
Wonderful. And we are almost out of time. So I want to thank our listeners for listening. And Brody, I want to thank you for your participation always and everything that you do, both on the radio shows and beyond. John, I want to tell you, you are so inspiring. And I want nothing more than your success, because I think your success will spell out the success for your district as well as we as a country. We need more leaders like you. I hope you not only get elected, but you find ways of cloning yourself throughout the entire government and take us to victory on all fronts. I have two teenage sons, and they need a leader like you. Their world is the one most under threat, and everything you've said makes me believe that you're a leader who would embrace the changes needed to really give them a future. And if the control of this government stays in the hands of Republicans as it is now, I don't really believe they will have one. So your success, I think, is absolutely crucial, and I would absolutely encourage all of our listeners in your district or outside to lend their support to your campaign. Your voice is important, and we need it there where it counts. Brody, any final words from you?
That's it. Again, and I know the representative has other things to do. Please extend my personal thanks to your campaign staff. They were marvelous. And Representative Hoadley, best of luck.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And with that, this has been another episode of Rated LGBT Radio. Brody and I will be back again next week. Please do tell your friends to find us on their favorite podcast app and just do a search for Rated LGBT Radio and subscribe. We love our regular listeners, and your feedback is always important. Also, don't forget, out in Santa Cruz, that is tomorrow night, Saturday night, at 7 p.m., Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to that on www.ksco.com. And with that, we will see you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.